Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation. Recorded live during the Spring 2020 Wednesday webinar series.
Thank you for being here. And we will turn the time over now to Adeline Bates and her class on taking charge of your own education and loving it.
Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm excited to be here this morning. My topic today is something that I am very passionate about and I just love, and that is education and learning. As early as I can remember, I have loved learning and discovering new things. When I was little, I would eat breakfast really quickly and then I would go outside. And besides lunch, I would stay outside for the entire day until the sun went down. And I played in the fields and caught frogs and got super dirty making mud pies, rode my bike, just all kinds of things. And I would often come home at the end of the day very dirty. And so my dad would have to get the hose and he would spray me off in my clothes before I could even go inside. And I didn't really like that much, but it was worth it because I just love being outside. And when I grew up a little more, I went to kindergarten in public school, and I loved that too. I loved all the art projects, and I loved learning to read. I discovered books, and I loved the math competitions, the physical fitness competitions. We did plays and concerts and after school classes where I learned calligraphy and sculpting, ceramics. I just loved school. I had some friends and they'd tell me, oh, we don't really like school. And honestly, I didn't know what they were talking about because I loved it. I always loved school. And when I was about halfway through eighth grade, my mom pulled my younger brother out of school to homeschool him. And about that time, I still loved learning, but the environment wasn't my favorite. Sometimes I felt like it kind of got in the way of my learning. And so I begged to be taken out of school and homeschooled with my brother. And so my mom agreed. And my parents, neither one of them went to college. And so they weren't very confident in their abilities to teach me. And so basically I would just choose what I wanted to learn about. And they would find a mentor or a class or lessons or books that would help me to learn what I wanted to learn. And a couple of times I had some entrepreneurial adventures that they supported me in. But basically my education was, it was very self-guided and I was self-taught. And something else about me, I like something that's a challenge. I like challenging things. And so I choose to do hard things a lot. And since I was homeschooling, I kind of had the freedom to do whatever I wanted. And the high school allowed me to take some classes. So I took every AP class that they offered because I loved them. They were challenging, but very rewarding. And so you can imagine when I got to college, oh, I was in heaven. It was like this huge buffet of all kinds of classes that I could take and things that I could learn to do. And I started out in photography. And somewhere along the line, I ended up in food science nutrition. And finally, 5 years later, I graduated in chemical engineering. And if I ever heard of a class that sounded interesting to me, I took it, even if it didn't have anything to do with my major, because I just love learning new things. And so by the time I graduated, I had gained a lot of new skills. I pretty much took every PE class that was offered and a lot of just different kinds of things. So fast forward a bunch of years, and now I'm a mother with 10 kids, and I homeschool them, and I have homeschooled them from the beginning. And through the years, I've discovered something. This love of learning that I've always had, it doesn't come quite as naturally to everyone. And I really think it's something that you're born with, but just like a flower that you don't water, sometimes it can wither and even die. And you know, there's a few of us out there that might have like the gift of eternal love of learning no matter what. But I think for most, it's something that it has to be nurtured so that it can continually bloom. So to be able to help my children, I asked myself, you know, how do I get this love of learning that I know is inside of them? How do I get it to begin to grow and bloom again? And so I looked back on my life because somehow it was like the perfect environment that nurtured my love of learning without me even realizing it. And as I looked, I discovered some principles that really created and maintained that love of learning for me. And so that's what I'm going to be sharing in my presentation today. It's not an exhaustive list, and it's not really in any particular order, but these are the principles that I felt like were the most effective and the most important in my education. And the process of learning and gaining an education is really a quest for truth. And so I think before we start on the list, I'd like to talk a little bit about truth. I think it's important that we understand what that is. So I looked it up in Webster's 1828 dictionary, and it defines truth as conformity to fact or reality, exact accordance with that which is or has been or shall be, purity from falsehood. The hymn, "Oh Say What Is Truth," teaches us a little bit more. It says, "Oh say what is truth? 'Tis the fairest gem that the riches of the world can produce. Yes, say what is truth? 'Tis the brightest prize to which mortals and gods can aspire." Scriptures teach us that truth is one eternal round and that it's all connected into a great big whole. My own definition of truth is it's something that doesn't ever change. It's reliable, you can count on it. And as an engineer, I'm always looking for the most efficient way to do things. And to me, the most efficient way to learn is if you are seeking truth. So where do we find it? I believe you can find it anywhere and from anyone if you're looking. But of course, the best places are those that are packed with truth, such as classics. And by classics, I don't mean, you know, those dusty books that are on the shelf that your grandparents read, although they can be that. I mean something that you can go to over and over again and learn something new. Some of the best examples of classics to me are scriptures. There's, you know, a couple of scriptures that I've probably read over 100 times, and I can still go to them and learn something new. And that's what I mean by a classic. And classic books, a lot of times we think are just those nonfiction books, but they can be fiction as well. Thomas Jefferson said, "The field of imagination is thus laid open to our use, and lessons may be formed to illustrate and carry home to the heart every moral rule of life." And he goes on to explain that the lessons of life that are the duty of parents to teach their children are, quote, "more effectually impressed upon the minds of our children by reading King Lear than by all the dry volumes of ethics and divinity that were ever written." So sometimes the fictional classics are the more effective ones. The stories of fictional classics, they're not real, but they are written by real people. And the characters they create are like little snippets of people that they really do know. And their stories incorporate valuable lessons that they've learned and insights that they've gained in their life. So fictional classics, they can be just as valuable as the nonfiction ones. And when we think of classics, you know, we usually think of books, but it's more than books. It can be works of art or music or even people, although I think we'd probably call them mentors. But classics are usually primary sources. Not like a textbook where you have, you know, a piece of an event or part of a quote. And when we read these classics, it allows us to get inside of the minds and see through the eyes of the greatest people in our past and our present. And it's the best way for us to learn how to emulate them. So now that we know a little bit about truth and where to find it, let's talk about the path we take to obtain it. If I were to ask you to choose anywhere in the world that you could take a morning stroll, where would it be? What path would you choose? Mine would probably be Mount Meadow in the springtime, where it's peaceful and quiet, and all you can hear are the birds singing and the crickets chirping. and I'd be able to feel the warm sun on my face and see the deep blue sky with maybe a few puffy white clouds floating by. And I'd be like surrounded with meadow grass that's nice and green and lush and all kinds of different beautiful flowers and maybe a little stream trickling by. That would be the path that I'd choose. Now, I have a roommate who, when I was in college, and she would probably choose for her stroll to be downtown New York or Chicago or some big city like that, because her dream was to always move to a city and live in the top of a tall high rise and be able to like view the cityscape in the evenings. So the path that she would choose, I would not enjoy at all. And she probably wouldn't enjoy mine because they're very different. But does that make my path right and hers wrong? Does it make mine better? No, they're just different. These paths, they're just like our pursuit of education. They're all different. We come to this earth with passions and talents and gifts that are unique to us. And we each have a different purpose in this life, a mission to accomplish. And all of our missions are important, but they're all different. And so those passions and talents and gifts that we come with, they help guide us to what we need to do in order to accomplish these missions. And this kind of leads us to our first principle on my list of gaining a love of learning, and that is to recognize that your path of education is going to look different from other people, and it's okay. It's important to realize this so that the path that you choose, you can feel at peace with. I saw a meme recently that illustrates this principle really well, and since I don't have a slideshow, I didn't know how to do screen sharing with a phone. We'll have to go with, you know, the saying, a picture's worth 1,000 words. We're going to have to do the 1,000 words today. So just use your imagination. But it was this cartoon, and there was a man that was like dressed really nicely in a suit, and he was sitting at a long table. There were a stack of papers in front of him. He had a pen in his hand. And the table was set up outside, and lined up in front of the table were like 5 different animals. And I don't remember specifically what they were, so I'll pretend. But say there's like a fish, an elephant, a monkey, a snake, and a rabbit. And behind them in the background was a big tall tree. And the man at the desk said something to the effect of, "Today's examination is to climb that big tall tree. And your grade is going to be based on how well and how fast you climb." Well, obviously, no animals in the group other than the monkey and maybe the snake could even climb the tree. So that was not a good educational path for pretty much all of them. So it's okay if our path is different from other people because we have different strengths. We have different interests. We have different weaknesses. And so we all require a different sort of path. This leads us to the second principle, which is personalize your education. Design your education the way that you are going to love it. Now, I understand that for the youth, especially, there are different structures to the schooling that you may be doing. Some of you may be going to a public school or a private school or being homeschooled. And if you're homeschooling, there's probably as many structures for homeschooling as there are families that homeschool. So I realize we're all across the board here, and parents, they have a different structure to their lives as well. And so those of you that don't have as much control over education, you may ask the question, well, how do I personalize my education? But the thing we have to realize is that that is a principle. And principles can be applied in many different ways. So the trick is you have to be creative. And I came up with a list of some ideas for you. So those that are in the group of having a lot of structure and not a lot of control over your education, there are still things you can do. The first thing is you can learn in a place that is inspiring for you. When I was in public school, I had to sit at a desk. So I can't really go many places, but you know, if you're in that situation, maybe you have like a postcard or a picture of a place that inspires you. You know, you could set that on the corner of your desk if you have permission to do that. Just something that makes your environment inspire you. Another thing you can do is explore additional resources. If you're learning, say, the history of Beethoven, and you're just not really getting into it, maybe go find some of his music and listen to his music, or find some other resources that have different information in it. There might be information that's more exciting to you than the resource that you're using. Something else you can do is figure out a way to make your learning hands-on. So if you're studying geography or geometry, you could make manipulatives out of clay or wood or paper, something like that, so that you can hold those shapes in your hands and turn them around and see them from different angles and just incorporate that other way of learning through a hands-on approach. Something else that you could do is teach what you're learning to someone else. If you're having a hard time remembering something, this is the best way to really have it stick in your brain, is if you try to go teach it to someone else. You'll find where your holes are, where you need to study a little more, or, you know, the things that you actually do understand really well. Another thing you can do is discuss what you're learning with others, because other people have a new perspective that they can offer, and they may have interesting facts that you didn't know about. Another thing you can do is look for elements of your passions in all subjects, because remember, truth is one eternal round, and it's all connected somewhere. So if you're studying music, but your passion is math, look for the math in your music and you'll find it. And I think the last and most important one that I thought of is have an open mind. Don't make up your mind that you don't like something before you even try. Give it a chance. You never know if you're going to like it or not. So again, for those of you that don't have a whole lot of control, remember that you do have free time. And in that free time, you can use that to pursue a passion that you do have. And the neat thing about the love of learning is it's very contagious. And as you get that love of learning, it spills out to other subjects. And so if you're pursuing one of your passions in your free time, that will help you love your other learning as well. So for the group of you out there that don't have a lot of structure and have lots of control over what you do, that would be a lot like how my education was growing up. All the above apply to you, but there's a few more that I thought of. And the first one is start with things that you love. Find your passions, things that you're interested in, you're excited about, and start with those things. And when they become boring or you're done with them, then put them aside and move on and try something new. If you don't like a subject, but you know that it's important for you to learn, try a different approach. If you're learning math and it's just, you know, you don't love it, try a different approach to it. Learn about the mathematicians of the past. Learn about the time periods that they lived in. It adds more life and more soul to what you are learning, and you will find that you enjoy it a lot more. Now, I have a couple of tips for you parents out there to help your kids love learning again. These are things that I have tried and these have worked the best. I've tried a lot of different things, but these I feel like are the best ones. And the first one is pursue something that you love and include your kids in it. Through all the years of having kids, I was kind of tired, didn't have a lot of time, and so I didn't really do much with my education. But about 3 years ago, when I felt like a real person again, I decided to pursue my education. And I started reading tons of books, all different kinds. And I started reading aloud to my kids, and I started discussing the books I was reading with my older kids. And the transformation that took place in my home was incredible. It was like a miracle. All of my kids were excited about learning again. And more specifically, they were excited about reading. And I didn't even have to really do anything. I felt like that it wasn't really any work. All I was doing is working on myself, but they were inspired by that. The next thing is similar, but slightly different. Learn something new. I watched my girls doing 4-H for a couple of years, and they've done a lot of quilting projects, and it looked interesting to me. So about a year and a half, I decided I'm going to learn quilting. And, you know, one goal that I have for my kids is to teach them that learning is a lifelong pursuit. You're never too old. So here I am, about 40 at the time, and I decide I'm going to learn how to quilt. And when I do something new, I jump in with both feet and just dive right in and immerse myself in it. And that's what I did with quilting. I took some classes, I watched some tutorials online, and just spent a lot of time quilting. And I entered some of my quilts in the state fair, won a couple ribbons, and even won a national competition. And through all of that, my kids were so excited for me, but they were so excited about starting something new themselves. One of my sons, my 12-year-old son, he started learning something that I don't really even understand, so I'm not sure what to call it, but it was something that no one in my family really knew anything about, and he just decided he wanted to do it. So we got some books from the library, and his dad kind of helped him with it, and just he took off and was so successful with it. And I watched my other kids gain that like courage to try something new, and it was just because they were inspired by mom. Oh, mom's doing this, I can do this too. And it was really quite amazing to watch. The other thing is to give your children some freedom to choose. When I started homeschooling, it was very, very structured. Yes, I grew up being homeschooled, but I had never done it as a parent, so I didn't really know how. And so I kind of just copied how the public schools do, and it had a lot of structure. And through the years, I've gotten rid of that because I have learned that we all come with a compass. And if you allow that compass to work and you allow your children to lead and you just kind of follow them and facilitate what they're wanting to learn and maybe nudging them here or there, if they're missing a few things, you will be surprised at how well this works. I have been surprised at the excitement they have in pursuing new things, but also that being allowed to pursue their passions and being excited about it, it gives them the motivation and the confidence to go after those things that they don't like quite as much and to be successful at it, even if it's hard. The last thing I have on my list for the parents is to be patient. All of these things that I have tried took lots of time, like years. It takes time for things to really start moving. And be encouraging and give honest praise. Make sure that their learning process is a positive experience. Okay, so the third principle on my list is to own your education. You need to realize that gaining your education is your responsibility, and that goes for children, youth, adults, everyone. It's up to you to get it. No one's going to give it to you. No one's going to get it for you. You have to own it. So to illustrate this principle, I'm going to share a story about the first camera that I ever bought. When I was young, I owned a point-and-shoot camera, and I loved taking pictures. I've always loved taking pictures. But as I grew older, I wanted to be able to manipulate the photographic process a little more. And so I wanted a camera where I could adjust the aperture and the focus, do it myself, and add filters and things like that. So I went to a shop to decide what camera I was going to get. This is before the internet. So my dad took me to the shop and I found the camera that I wanted. And it was hundreds of dollars. And so I was a little bit discouraged because I did not have that much money. I had some, but not nearly enough. But I was excited because I knew this is something that I could have. This is what I'm going to get if I work for it. So this was about the springtime, and so I decided to go to work with my dad every day that summer. My dad owns a landscape company, and so his work is very, very hard. But I had the ability to go with him. And so he would come wake me up in the morning before the sun even rose, and we'd grab a quick breakfast and get out on the job before the sun even rose. And it was freezing cold and the dew was on the grass. And we would start working and we'd work and work and work. And then maybe for lunch, we'd stop for just a little bit to go grab a hot dog at the gas station or something. And then we'd come back and work and work and work. And I grew up in Utah, and the summers in Utah are very hot. So we worked in the hot sun, and it was hard work, hard work. We laid sod, planted flowers, pulled weeds, swept up rocks, dug ditches, like all kinds of things. And it was tough. I was like 14 or 15. So that's hard work for a youth. And we would work hard all day until the sun went down. And then we would go home and I would go to bed. And then I would dream about what I did the whole night long. So basically I worked 24/7 the entire summer. And again, it was hard work. There were some days that I would wake up and I didn't want to go. I was so exhausted. But then I would think about my camera that I was trying to earn money for. And I would get up and go to work. And finally, by the end of the summer, I had enough money. So we went back to the shop and I got my camera. The nice thing was they had a special going where if you bought that camera, you would get a free case and some free filters for your camera. So not only did I get my camera, but I also got extra stuff. And I was so, so excited about it. And I brought my camera home and I took such great care of my camera. It was my baby. It went many different states, several countries. Like, it went everywhere with me. And I cherished it because I owned it. I did the work to get it. And this story, I think, it's a great illustration of how to own your education. As Stephen Covey said, begin with the end in mind. You have to have a vision of where you're going. You have to know what you're wanting to achieve. And then you have to take charge. Realize that it's your responsibility. Nobody's going to get it for you. No one was going to come and hand that camera to me. I had to work for it. Work hard and don't give up. Pay the price to reach your vision. When you own your education, you will appreciate it more and you'll enjoy it more. And you'll have the motivation to keep going when it gets hard. Those days that I did not want to get out of bed and go to work, I thought about my camera and that helped me get up. Mortimer Adler has said that every invitation to learning can promise pleasure only as the result of pain, can offer achievement only at the expense of work. So the only way that you will be able to do the hard work required and to work through that pain that is involved in the learning process is to own it. The kind of education that you'll get pursuing it this way, it will be the highest quality too, because you're putting all your effort into it. Just like my camera was a really high quality camera, but it's worth it in the end. Rachel DeMille from Thomas Jefferson Education said, "Ideally, all students would be effective self-educators rather than dependent on experts. When each learner deeply owns his or her education, the quality of study and overall education increases." So it comes naturally with that hard work and owning your education. Those fruits will naturally come. So take charge of your education and own it and realize it's up to you to get it. So the fourth principle is dig in. You probably are all familiar with the phrase, you love those whom you serve. And you love them because you invest yourself in them. And this is a universal principle, so it applies to your studies as well. If you want to love learning, you need to invest yourself into it. That doesn't mean like flipping through a couple books or kind of just getting the general idea of it. It means jumping in with both feet, immersing yourself in it. Dig in and dig deep. Learn as much as you can about the different subjects and put all your effort into it. Make it quality. The saying, fake it till you make it, it applies here. Act as if what you're learning is your passion, and eventually it will be. Another good saying to remember in this process is seek and ye shall find. That's a promise. If you seek to enjoy and love what you're learning, you will find it. But you have to pay the price for that and work hard to get to that point. The fifth principle that I have is learn from mentors. Learn from people who are passionate about the subject. Excitement is infectious. And like I said, the love of learning, it's contagious. But it's not just from subject to subject. It's from person to person too. If you've ever talked to one of these mentors that's super passionate about what they're talking about, you know what I mean. You know, a textbook is, it doesn't hold that kind of passion like a classic does. Authors of classics, they are mentors, even though they're not alive anymore, or maybe some of them are, but they're sharing through the written word their love and their passion about their subject, and you can catch that by reading their words. The sixth and last principle that I'm going to talk about is use it. Like the saying goes, use it or lose it. If we are getting a good quality education, it means that we are taking what we are learning and we are applying it in our lives. It's doing something for us. It's changing us. Learning leads to doing, and doing leads to becoming. We're becoming better people and better tools in the Lord's hand to help his children. Remember that the purpose of our education in seeking truth is to accomplish our mission in life. Every mission helps and serves others in some way. And this service, it simply adds to the joy of learning that we already have. So like I said, there are more principles to gaining a love of learning, but these are the ones that I found to be the most important and most effective in my learning and in my teaching of my kids. And all these principles, they apply to all of us. Oliver DeMille said, "When young people learn to truly love learning, to pursue knowledge, wisdom, and skills because learning is a passion, a joy, and deeply rewarding in many ways, they will naturally work for and obtain a great education." And again, this applies to adults too. So to love learning and to feel passionate about it is the key. It's the key. If you have this, then you'll have the commitment and the motivation that you need to go through the hard work and the pain that it takes to acquire a fantastic quality education. It will bring you and others joy. It will lift you and others around you, and it'll help you accomplish your mission. It will also help you to find truth. And as we learned in John 8, chapter 8, verse 32, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." So I hope that all of you commit today, or recommit today, to kindle that flame of passion for learning and nurture your innate joy of discovery so that it can continually bloom and spread, and so that you can help those around you in ways that you couldn't otherwise. And you will be able to accomplish your mission and do the best job that you can at it. And that's all I have. So thanks for listening. We'll turn the time over to questions.
Thanks, Adeline. So if anybody has any questions they would like to ask, feel free to put those in either the question and answer or the chat box, and I will grab them and read them for Adeline. Well, Adeline, I don't see any questions coming in.
Okay.
So I appreciate you taking the time to share your love of learning with us. Gives me a little more excitement. Maybe I'll go find something new to go learn, especially during this time. We thank everybody for being here today. And remember, we have another presentation this evening at 6 p.m. Eastern, and again next week. So thank you and have a wonderful day.
Thank
you. Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.